Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Shane Scott. He'll preview the agenda for Wednesday's county council meeting. Later on, Park City resident Jen Drummond has become the first woman to climb all eight, yes, eight, the second tallest peaks in the world. And Park City Ski and Snowboard Alpine Director Tommy Eckfeldt is joined by SkiMo Director Adam Lewis. They'll preview this winter season. Later on, stay tuned for This Green Earth. Today's guests include award-winning graphic designer Esther Gonzalez, who's just created a book called Atlas of a Threatened Planet, 150 infographics to help anyone save the world. Then local Anna Robertson, co-founder of The Cool Down, shares more about her mission to make it easier for everyone to help themselves while they help the planet. All of that coming up on This Green Earth. Of course, you can hear This Green Earth every Tuesday from 9 to 10. Good morning. Well, at an open house yesterday, city leaders chatted with the public to share ideas and answer questions about the future of downtown Heber. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more about that.
Some of the goals of the Envision Central Heber plan are to bring new life to downtown, support local businesses, and improve safety for walkers and bikers. The open house included concepts for the band shell under construction in City Park, plans for other additions to the park, like a skating ribbon and splash pad, and ideas for a walkable corridor parallel to Main Street. Roger Brooks is the CEO of Destination Development Association, a company focused on downtown planning. He visited Heber to talk with locals about the vision.
And this plaza or square is going to change. Every couple of weeks, there'll be new things like hula hoops or those big giant chess sets or a portable climbing wall, all free, and it's all meant for families and kids.
Brooks describes the plan as creating a living room for locals to gather and relax.
It will be the most awesome square in the United States.
Dallin Kocher, the executive director of the Heber Valley Chamber of Commerce, says he heard a lot of helpful questions, comments, and ideas from locals during the morning session.
Heber City is evolving, and we need to evolve with it.
Tanya Olson, owner of Olson Home Design on 2nd South, says she's hopeful that changes coming to downtown Heber will eventually help her business.
It'll be amazing once it's up and running, and I think there will be a lot of traffic and a lot of visibility for not only my business, but, you know, all the businesses around here.
Other property owners and business owners said they came to Monday's event to learn more about what could happen nearby. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the Summit County Council meets on Wednesday, starting in a work session at 11 o'clock at the County Courthouse in Colville. They'll be interviewing applicants for vacancies on the South Summit Cemetery Maintenance District. They'll move into closed session and then reopen about 1:20 in work session in the studio with a preview. I have Summit County Manager Scott Shane. Shane Scott, thanks. Thanks, I got that right.
You did. Good morning, Leslie.
Yeah.
How are you?
Hey, so the council, first off, will be getting a presentation about historic structures in Hoytsville, Hennifer, Echo, Colville, and Upton. How come?
Well, I think we just would like to have more of an inventory of what we have, and if there are some preservation measures we need to take, we'd like to know that. I think there aren't very many strong recommendations coming from this particular report, but I think it's good to have an idea of what we have, and of course that the history in our community is very, very important to us, so we want to honor that and be careful with it.
Yeah, and I guess I found it a little bit hard to believe that there really weren't strong recommendations for putting any buildings on the National Register of Historic Places. The study says that there's not clear enough individual significance in any one building, but kind of looking through some of the photos in the report, there certainly seem to be some historic buildings in there.
I agree with you, and I had the same questions. I haven't talked to Joe Frazier about this yet, and we'll have some questions for him at council meeting. But when a historian tells you they don't have historical significance, I don't want to pay attention to that, and that does surprise me. But especially one of the most interesting buildings that I've seen probably in my time in Summit County is that church out in Echo, and that was in the report, and I can't imagine that's not on the historic register. So that's my question: is if this doesn't qualify, what does? And that's a really, really interesting and cool building if you haven't been there.
Yeah. So at this point, we don't know what they were lacking.
Well, yes, I don't, at least. Mm-hmm. And I did read the report, but it wasn't clear there. So I think we have some questions we need to ask.
Yeah, and why, I guess, has it taken for so long for something like this to be done? And I guess because in the meantime, you may have lost lots of historic buildings.
That may be true. I don't know. That one of the recommendations that did come from this is that we do this again periodically. I think it may have been said 5 years. So I think that's something we need to do on an ongoing basis. And I'm not sure if we haven't done it recently, but that's something we definitely need to pay attention to.
All right. And now that you have this data, I guess now what?
Well, it's at least a baseline, if not an addition to what we already had. So maybe there are some more, maybe some of these structures, locations, buildings become more historically significant over time. That's what I would assume. But again, I'm not sure exactly where we go from here.
All right. And then at about 1:45, there'll be a continued discussion regarding potential code changes for special service district budgets. I think what we're hearing from the directors of these budgets that the council has plenty of oversight, and this has just become too cumbersome and bureaucratic. So what do you think?
Well, I completely agree. It's a logistical situation where we're trying to have our own public hearings at the end of our fiscal year. And in adopting budgets for next fiscal year, they're doing the same thing. We have to work around each other. We are also operating in the basin as well as the east side of the county. These administrative control boards, by state statute, have the ability to adopt their own budgets and have their own public hearings. And the council, years ago, took that control from those administrative control boards. And this is essentially those staff members asking for that to be turned over back over to the administrative control boards. They're assuring us that they would share budgets and there would be opportunities for council members to weigh in if they'd like to. It would just be more the logistics of those meetings, those public hearings, I'm very much in favor of taking off of councils. Tomorrow we start at 11:10. I mean, we have. The next couple months, I've had to tell people that are reaching out to us trying to get on the council agenda. I'm like, call us in 2025 because it is a very busy time of year, and this would, I think, alleviate some of those meetings for the council.
Yeah. So are we talking about just these three special service districts that are asking for this, Park City Fire District, Basin Recreation, and Mountain Regional Water?
Yes, and I think the distinction there is that all three of these organizations have their own finance directors. They have very very active administrative control boards that are very involved in the day-to-day. So I think it does make some sense to empower them in this way.
All right. So that's just a discussion. Does it actually have to come for some kind of vote to change?
It does. It would be a change of county code. The code has said that that the council is that body.
All right. Later on, an hour-long budget discussion. What are you going to be focusing on Wednesday?
This Wednesday, we're rolling out the schedule for the rest of the year. That's including some of the different presentations that some of the departments will make. We have focused this year, I think we've probably mentioned it in on the radio here this year, on what we call a peak performance initiative. This is an effort by all departments to take a look at their processes to make sure that we're being as efficient as possible. So when For example, Margaret Olson did a wonderful job of going through some processes that she's running into in the county attorney's office. At the same time, she's asked for a couple of employees. So I think this will give us the opportunity in the council to have the opportunity to say, what have you done to increase efficiencies to make sure we don't have too many people, that we're not just adding to an ever-growing workforce, that these folks are very necessary. And I think Margaret's got a really good story there, and we'll talk about that on Wednesday, as well as Peter in addition to that. So we're going to have other departments come over the next couple of months. We'll roll out that schedule, and I think we are going to focus on full-time employees at Wednesday's meeting.
Okay. And so this PPI, this Peak Performance Initiative, where'd that come from? Was that something that you brought with you?
That was actually Jana. Jana was 100% Jana, and she's really taken that on. She is actually going to be presenting as well, just a general overview of what it is, again, to daylight that to the public if they haven't been following that initiative. And what an exciting, I've seen some real changes in departments, and I'm excited to show that to not only the council, but the public.
Yeah, so has anybody said, oh, I really don't need this person?
Yes. Well, they haven't asked for the person and then took it back, but they've actually gone through that initiative and said, going through this has allowed us to show why we don't need a person or why we're okay as we are. And so, and maybe initial thoughts were we could use a person in here. And I think through some changes, you'll see that over the next couple of months as we have these departments come in here. There's a lot of departments that aren't getting new people, and I think they've been able to show some efficiencies in just looking at the processes they follow.
All right. Have you, as the budget manager here, come up with a list of cuts in the event that voters don't approve that 0.5% sales tax?
We have. We actually presented that last meeting two Wednesdays ago. We presented up some possible cuts, and that was, we presented that to kick off the discussion about going through the truth and taxation process. So my recommendation was we go through what we call TNT. We don't have to raise taxes, but we did have to decide, excuse me, before the vote on November 5th, whether or not we would go through the process of truth and taxation. So we've started that process. We will be sending mailers out. And in having that discussion with council, we did highlight some of the ways that we would have to cut. And some of those cuts were very deep and would be really problematic for us in continuing to maintain the services we are today. So after November 5th, we'll have that discussion again. And I think no matter what, we'll always look for ways that we can cut that don't degrade our services. And we'll go through that process, this budget process, whether that emergency services sales tax passes, whether we raise taxes, we'll still go through that process.
Yeah, but so did this PPI process, I mean, did it help reduce then that budget deficit?
Yes. We had, I think it was $17 million of requests that came out of into the budget committee above and beyond what we adopted in fiscal year 24. So that was $17 million. I think we landed about $7 million over. So there was about $10 million in cuts that we went through as part of the PPI process, as part of the budget committee process. We've tried to delay things that aren't absolutely essential. For example, Jess Kirby asked for some things on the 910 that we would, as we ramp up maintenance on there, that we would like to she would wanted to start next year. We've asked her to start some of those things and put some of those things into fiscal year 26. So it's through those processes that we try to not explode a budget from $70 million to $100 million overnight.
Yeah. And you mentioned Summit County Attorney Margaret Olson does have a request in for two new full-time folks. And we have, again, heard of that need for increased support there in the legal department. Do we know what the county has spent yet on the Corey Richens trial?
I couldn't tell you. I can find out and I can get that number, and that's a public number. But it's been extensive, and what's really been disheartening and challenging for Margaret is it's not just that case. That is obviously a high profile case with a lot of experts and a lot of attention, but just all that department's had to go through in defending just the different things that have happened. It's just really, really been surprising how ramped up our caseload is, and it's unfortunately not a good thing.
Yeah, I guess that's what I was kind of getting to. I mean, once this case is decided, will those additional people still be needed?
Well, a lot of them will. I think the full-time employees will be, but a lot of the professionals, the consultants, those won't. And so we have ramped up. Like one portion of our budget that's not just salaries and wages, it's like professional and technical. So we've ramped that up, and we're hoping that can ramp back down once this case is over, because this case has needed some particular expertise that we shouldn't need on an ongoing basis.
Right. All right, short discussion scheduled for the request for proposals for the Klein-Dolly property there near Jeremy Ranch. So RFP hasn't already been issued at this point, huh?
Not yet. We're hoping maybe this is the last time we'll bring back feedback from the council at both the last council meeting when we discussed this, as well as the retreat. As been reported here on KPCW, we had a very robust housing discussion at our retreat a couple of weeks ago. We took a lot of the feedback from that retreat. One of the things that came out of that retreat was we need to have a further discussion about housing, especially next year when we have one, possibly two new council members. But The most important thing is that we can continue on with the Klein-Dolly process and the Dakota Pacific negotiations this year, and we're going to continue to do that. We're looking for a development partner in this RFP, one that can tell us what our options might be. If we sell the land to a developer, if we lease the land to a developer, if we co-own the land, if we retain ownership and just have a partner that develops it. So what do those look like? What are our options? And we'd like to build some light commercial in addition to up to 210 residential units.
Okay. And at 3:15, again, a continued discussion with regard to the Dakota Pacific real estate proposals. And we're starting to hear more from residents as this newest proposal is kind of making its way out into the community. And I think residents are asking, how did we get here? How is developing 1,000 new residential units a good thing? And what happened to the 500 units idea from earlier this year?
Well, I don't think it's 1,000. I think they've proposed 500 market rate units on that west side of the property. They have been willing to do another 250 affordable units on that same property. So that would be 750. We've also set aside 165 affordable units on the east side around the parking structure. So I think right now what our effort is to decide how much is too much, how much is too little. Can we take an opportunity to have not only 500 market rate units, but also 250 affordable units, and say no to that? That may be an option. That may be something we need to do. But that, I think we're somewhere in between that. What's 750 plus 165?
915. So we're close to 1,000.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're somewhere between 915 and probably 665. I think that's probably where we need to land. Of course, we can land on not doing anything at all, and that's still an option. But I think that's how we got here. The developer is saying we need to do 500 market rate units on this property to make it pencil. I would make one more time the argument that more individuals doesn't necessarily, that are living in this Kimball Junction area, doesn't necessarily mean more people are going to be coming up the. It means that less people will be coming up the Parley's Canyon and getting off of the Kimball Junction and going down 224. And they're right by a transit center, which will probably be in a more extensive transit center. So there's a lot of real synergies to having this housing in this location. People like to say, we need the right amount of housing in the right location at the right time. And is this that location?
All right. So what's the county getting out of this partnership? I mean, by allowing this kind of density, we get some what property for county buildings? We're getting 250 affordable units.
250 is one proposal. The 165 is already on the table and hasn't been agreed to, but is more or less part of the subcommittee's proposal. We're getting an extremely upgraded transit center. Potentially we get a fix to Kimball Junction and 224. We have some synergy there with the developer in advocating not only a fix to 224, but perhaps some other funding sources through the legislature. That's whether that's a resort communities tax or additional flexibility with TRT. There are some other things that we're hoping to get out of this process. But also I think what we've done is preliminarily created a neighborhood that is inviting, that has a amphitheater, that is a place where people will want to go. We're trying to be in a placemaking environment here, and I think we've done a really good job. 2 weeks ago, we took a site visit to this area and walked around all over here with the developer and all of the council, and pointed to where things might be on the map and where they are in real life. And it's really exciting. I think we could do something really exciting. You had just run a story there that Heber City, I think, is doing a similar exercise in their community. And I think they want to bring people to their downtown and do some certain things. I think whoever was talking said it's going to be the best place in America or something like that. I would argue that the Kimball Junction area could be a really special place with a gathering place for people. And I'm very excited about what I'm seeing.
Okay. And I just want to check, just make a note. I mean, when you say that we get fixes to 224, We have the 2034 Winter Olympics coming to town. We're going to get that fix regardless of what happens on Dakota Pacific. Isn't that a fair statement? And,
I think that if we're not cohesive on what's going to happen in the Kimball Junction area, I think that could throw a wrench in things. I think we probably will, and I think you're right. But I think we have not only a more surety of that happening, but also we get to weigh in so much more on what that fix is when we have cohesion on what's going to happen in the Kimball Junction area.
Okay. And then as you mentioned, I mean, we did hear from Summit County Economic Development Housing Director Jeff Jones at the retreat that we need housing for people earning 40 to 50% of the area median income. Is that in this proposal?
Yes, I don't think we've talked really specifically about AMIs, but that would be especially the 165 that would be county owned. We have a lot of flexibility in those AMIs, and we are now in that same discussion that you just referenced. We do talk about, some people said the missing middle. I think we're trying to get away from that moniker, but those between 80 and 120, we have AMIs. Not the deeply affordable, but those that are maybe meeting those income thresholds and still can't find housing. If you look at the Klein-Dolly proposal, we're trying to get, I think 40% of what's been being proposed is between 30 and 60% AMI. So those projects that we have some say in, we're trying to get to be extremely affordable and, of course, deed restricted.
All right, Shane, anything else you wanted to mention?
Well, just maybe finally on the Dakota Pacific, we are having a public hearing. I'm going to say it's November 7th. I think that's very sure, and I'm here today, so I'm going to say that. Please pay attention. It may not be that day, but that is the day that it looks like it's going to work the best. We're trying desperately to have that in the Snyderville Basin area. We have had everyone tell us no. And having it at Richens just feels like it's not going to be big enough. There is a chance we'll go to Ledges out in Colville because it's a very big space, and of course we own it. But we're trying very hard to have that in the basin, and we have, I think, one place left that we're trying. So November 7th between 5:30 and 7:30, and of course we'll daylight this much more aggressively as it comes forward.
Okay, Shane, thanks for your time this
morning. Leslie, thank you. Have a great day.
That's Summit County Manager Shane Scott. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, on October 9th, Park City resident Jen Drummond became the first woman and only the second person ever to successfully climb the second tallest peaks on each continent, all eight of them. She joins me now in the studio to explain, given that we only have seven continents. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. I know, a crazy story. I actually had to climb 9 mountains because when Guinness World Records was looking to file this pursuit, they said, you know, some people think Indonesia is a part of Australia instead of Asia, so we really want you to climb that mountain in Indonesia named Sumantri. And if Russia was to break off from Europe, the second highest point would be Mount Rosa in Switzerland, so could you climb that too? So I did that one in May of this year, and then Indonesia just opened, and we just got Sumantri done October 9.
Okay, well then tell me all of the peaks then that you have climbed, if you can kind of do it chronologically then.
Yeah, definitely. So we have, the event started December 2020 with Ojos del Salado in Chile. Then I went to Mount Kenya in Africa in February of 2021. I did Dik Tau in Russia, September of 2021. Mount Tyree in Antarctica, January 1st of 2022. Great way to start the year. K2 in July of 2022. Then I did Mount Townsend in Australia of November of 2022. Mount Logan in North America, June 1st of 2023. We thought we were done. And then I did Mount Rosa in May of 2024, and then just completed Sumantri October 9 of 2024.
Wow, that's so impressive. I guess of those 9 peaks you climbed, which one was hardest?
Oh, they're hard in different ways, if I had to be honest. It's like your kids. What one's your favorite? Well, it depends on the day. I think really Mount Logan was probably one of the hardest ones, and it's our North America home base mountain, just because you were not allowed assistance and had to carry all of your gear. And it's a very windy mountain. So you would set up a camp. You'd have to build an igloo to prevent your tent from ripping in the wind, bury your gear so it didn't blow away, and you had to do that 5 times. So each time you set up a new camp, you had to build a new igloo and protect all of your stuff. It was just a lot of work.
Yeah. And then K2 is known to be one of the most difficult climbs. Certainly, they say more difficult than Mount Everest. I guess that has its own challenges.
K2 really does. It's avalanche prone, so you have to worry about that risk. There is climbing features at high altitude. So Everest is a hike for the entire time. You're just using your 2 feet. K2 has different sections called the chimney and areas where you all of a sudden have a 100-foot rock climb in between all the climbing and pieces. So it's definitely more difficult and dangerous because of the steepness. If somebody makes an accident on K2 at Camp 4, they can fall all the way down to base camp. So it's steep.
Yeah. Which one took the longest?
This last one, can you believe this? This Indonesia climb was one single day, my friends. But it was so hard to get in because of the civil war. And so I flew over there, and I was on 16 days of standby. And every morning I'd wake up at 6 a.m. and they'd be like, nope, we're not flying today. Be ready for tomorrow. And I'm in an area of the world that is not safe. So they're moving me hotels. They're moving me hotel rooms. They don't want me to establish a pattern in the area. We finally got the green light to fly in. We flew in. Within 15 minutes, we started climbing the mountain.
And then you were up within how many hours?
We were up and down in, I think, about 10 hours. So it's a quick climb. It's just getting there. There's no route established. And it's kind of funny, the landscape. You want to make sure you pick the right route. Otherwise, you hit a dead end and have to back up and go forward again. So we did that a couple times, but got it done, went to bed, woke up the next day, did the highest point in Indonesia, went to bed, flew out the next day. So once I was there, it was fine. It was just the somatics of getting there.
Yeah. And looking at the photos, I see the, given the clothing you've got on, there's no oxygen mask. I mean, kind of the climb itself, more of one of the easier than just the climb itself.
Yeah, that's what's frustrating about it. It wasn't that it was this like really hard climb that was keeping me from getting the record. It was the fact that the area wasn't safe to travel to. It's a volcanic rock. So I actually went through 5 pairs of gloves because the rocks would cut your gloves open, thank goodness. You wore thick ones because you were protecting your natural skin. And it's wet. So we would climb in, we would land and go, and it would just pour rain every single day because you're in the jungle. And it's crazy because you're at the equator, but when you're at the top of these mountains, which is right around 16,000 feet, you still have snow and ice.
Oh, wow. Even at the equator. Yeah. Interesting. There's also a photo of you with 3 armed guards. What's that about?
So what had happened when they first sent security in to clear the area to make sure it was safe enough for us to climb, and when they sent security in, they had found a dead body, and they didn't know the story there. And so we needed to bring extra security in. And a year ago, a pilot went down and was kidnapped and held hostage in this area. So getting these pilots to actually fly to that area, they wanted to make sure everything was secure and set. Me too. I have to come home to 7 children. So there was just a lot of police force and armed guards that they kept watch of the camp all night long, because when we had to go to Simantri, we had to cross the rebels' territory. And when we fly a helicopter in, it triggers that sound to have people wonder, like, hey, what's going on? Let's check it out. So we just had a lot of security there just to make sure everybody was safe and came home.
So these were private security as opposed to military?
They were Indonesian military. And so we had to hire the Indonesian military to protect us.
All right. And you say we. Were there other folks trying to make this climb, given that it was like a
There's
window?
There's a lot of people trying to make this climb throughout the entire world. Not the climb that I was doing, because I was the first person to go back to Simantri and climb the second highest peak in 7 years. But Karsten's Pyramid, if anybody's doing the 7 summits, that's part of that pursuit, if you want to hit every continent. So there's 8 for that one. They were all trying to get in there too. I brought over a U.S. guide to climb with me because this part of the world is a different culture and they do not value women as equals. And so if I didn't have somebody there to advocate for me, it would have been a lot harder journey and probably would not have made it to the top.
Yeah. So you've done it. Congratulations. I mean, I guess after all is said and done, I mean, what's that feel like?
Oh, friends, let me tell you, when you cover every possible version of something and you know in your heart of hearts that you've taken it and done it and there's 0 questions left, that integrity is a level of confidence and celebration that no one can take away from you. And it is the best feeling in the whole world. I'm so grateful. I'm so humbled. It was just... I mean, it was a celebration. It's a celebration still.
Yeah, well, yeah, it should be. And I was correct in saying the first woman and only the second person to do all nine then.
Yes, I am. And, you know, the crazy thing is I have three mountains left to be the first person to do all the firsts and all the seconds. So definitely heading down that path to knock those last three out and lock that record into.
So what's left then?
Okay, so I have Aconcagua in Argentina. I'm planning to do that one in January of this next year. Elbrus in Russia, and then Denali for North America, which is the highest point for the United States.
Okay. And then the one in Russia, is that going to be easy to get into?
So I've been talking to the embassy, and because of what I'm doing, they are going to give me a special permit to be able to go in and climb.
All right. And what have your kids had to say about it?
Oh, it's been so much fun. They're having a blast. They're so grateful. I took three of them to climb Kilimanjaro with me this March of this year, and they had a great time. And they're all asking, okay, well, these first summits, is there any more that we can go on? So I'm going to check out safety and see if I can bring a couple of them on these other climbs, which would be cool.
Well, and this, we should remind people that it all started because of really something I think your oldest son said to you.
Yes, if everybody remembers this whole series, this started because I was climbing a mountain named Ama de Blom, which my son heard as I'm a dumb blonde, and said I should climb a real mountain like Mount Everest. And our family does hard things, so I'm like, I'll show you what hard is. I'll do Everest because we're all capable of summiting our Everest no matter what it is. And that started this pursuit, and here we are, world record holder.
Yeah. Now, have you had sponsors or have you had to finance this all on your own?
I have had to finance most of this myself. As it's been coming together, some sponsors have stepped up at the end. So thank you, Mountain America Credit Union. Thank you, Momentous Supplements. Thank you, Black Diamond. And yeah, it's been wonderful.
Well, I'm guessing hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. We're probably just shy of a million.
Wow.
Yeah.
So again, you think of what you could have done with that money, this was what you wanted to do with it.
You know, you think back on that, and my whole thing has been showing women that we get to step and own our story and write it, not what culture says, not what our like group or community says. It's in our own heart of hearts. And it is a lot of money to spend. But when, for example, when I was just in Indonesia, and those women are property and a number, a husband can have five wives, and they're not allowed to be in the market. They're not allowed to walk around. They're not allowed to even dream of climbing a mountain. They're cleaning the hotel rooms, and I get to connect with them. And we can't understand the language, but they know that I'm there to climb. And so they see that, which I think plants a seed of curiosity of what's possible for them. And then when I climb the mountain with their counterparts and beat them to the top and do a good job, that causes that seed to be planted too. Like, why is this female capable of this and ours are not even allowed to pursue this? So I do think in pursuing what feels good to us here in the United States, we are so blessed with our opportunities and things that we can do that when we go to these other parts of the world, we're planting seeds of curiosity, which can change the narrative for others. And that's really important.
All right. I know you've written one book. Will there be another?
There will be another. So the first book is Breakproof, 7 Strategies to Build Resilience and Achieve Your Life Goals. It's very much a business goal setting. This is what I learned on this mountain. Here's how you apply it to your life. The next book that I'm working on is more of the emotional and story and what's going on in my mindset to get to the top.
All right. So have you kept journals then through?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Good. And then what about a film? Because I remember seeing a short that you had started with.
Yeah. So we did a short with Outside TV when I was halfway through the pursuit. We have footage for all of the pieces right now, looking at partnering with a different like writer just to make sure the story is written from a place that I feel good about. A lot of places are trying to write a story that isn't authentic to me, and it needs to be in my integrity for me to move forward.
All right. And then, so these three, and I guess at once that's done, does life just get a lot more boring?
I don't think life is ever boring with 7 children, I have to be honest with you. But yeah, I'm going to definitely have to figure out what that thing is that's going to allow me to move the needle on a cause that I care about.
All right. Anything else, Jen, you'd like to tell us?
No, I just thank everybody for the support and following along. This community's amazing. We are capable of doing hard things. So lean in, do you, and let's celebrate.
All right. Again, congratulations. That's quite amazing.
Thank you.
That's Park City resident Jen Drummond. Again, the first woman and only second person to successfully climb the second tallest peaks on each continent. And there's 9 of them, depending on how your geography works. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:45. Joining me now in the studio with an update from the teams at Park City Ski and Snowboard, I have Alpine Director Tommy Eckfeld, along with Ski-Mo Director Adam Loomis. Good morning.
Good morning.
Adam, let's start with you and talk a little bit about Ski-Mo. Maybe first remind people what Ski-Mo is.
Yeah, for sure. Season's coming right up on all of us, but ski mountaineering is one of the newer, although it's not brand new, but programs in Park City Ski and Snowboard. And we race typically on ski mountain, a variety of different formats going uphill and on lightweight gear, like ski touring style. And some people are on ski touring gear. Some people are on a little more specific Ski-Mo race gear. And then going downhill about as fast as you can, and sometimes doing that multiple times. And so we have a youth program as well as a program for adults, a master's program.
Oh, okay. So tell me a little bit about the equipment. People are using, what's the Ski-Mo specific stuff?
It's just a fair amount lighter, shorter, smaller. It's kind of like Nordic equipment in terms of weight, but it performs, if you trust it, closer to, the metal edge ski that it is.
Okay. So it does have metal edges, and you still use a kind of an ankle size boot?
Yep, so the boot has really good range of motion, but then for the way down, you lock it down so that it's a little bit stiffer.
All right, and then others will just use what they use for touring?
Yep, so especially in our Devo program, which is more skill development for those that are a little less competitive, they tend to be on, kind of what they have. Some of them, we see a big range, and we're totally open with that. Some of them are on pretty big gear that they can, ski a lot of powder and charge hard on, and some of them are on pretty light stuff.
All right. So as the sport becomes more popular, are you seeing that in your registration numbers?
Yeah. So over the past few years, we've seen a pretty good uptick. Last year, especially with adding our master's program, we had a good start to that, and we're excited to bring that back. The sport's seen a lot of attention, as well as the recreational backcountry skier and the people that just go skiing at Park City. It's definitely on an exciting trajectory.
Okay. Starting age then for the programs is what?
Usually 12 is on the younger side because the gear's management is so intensive that really for us, youth development, which we have youth development programs, is for Ski-Mo specifically, is try all the sports, an alpine, a Nordic background, even the freestyle is all a really great way to develop and then come to the sport, relatively a little bit older, but there's still plenty of time.
Okay, and you do this out of the Utah Olympic Park?
Yeah, so we do some training here at Park City Mountain on the standard route, but we're doing more and more at the Olympic Park, both just in the, kind of free ride, smaller hill area, as well as we have a really great expanded terrain on the West Peak slope, which was really cool to open up last year. It was considerably more challenging, more opportunity for skill development and a longer sustained run than we have here without going into the backcountry. Next year, or for this winter, we'll have even more terrain, a little bit easier uphill route, some different downhill as well. And they're hoping to bring that to the public this winter. I know that was the plan last year as well, to have some sort of uphill pass. And I do believe it's going to happen this year. But I can't say for certain, but I can say for certain that any of our programs, including our master's programs, we get really good access there.
Okay, and you were saying that you had some new rental fleet?
Yes, so this year we're kicking off a program where we got equipment at a discounted price, and we offer it to our athletes to be able to try out Ski-Mo equipment and lower the cost of entry because the equipment is extremely expensive. We do have a lot of great scholarships in available to our club, but scholarships don't usually cover equipment purchases. So this makes it really much more affordable. And will also give us an opportunity with the remaining gear we have that's not rented out in the season for people to come out and try it out. So look for some opportunities if you're curious.
Okay. And then people can find out more just by going onto the website.
Yeah, definitely. Go to parkcityss.org and see the ski mountaineering page.
Okay. Tommy, let's turn to you and just talk first about the upcoming event, the Park City Ski Swap, November 1st through the 3rd.
That's correct.
Back out at Basin Rec Fieldhouse.
Yeah. Basin Rec is graciously hosting again this year, so we're excited to be back into that space. And November 1st, we kick off with our move-in early morning. It'll be an all-hands-on-deck affair, check-in throughout the week at both the typical Jans and Cole Sport locations, as well as the Skull Candy building out in Kimball Junction. That was a huge hit last year, and so we're staffing that extra just to make sure we can get all of the public's needs and gear in for the swap this year.
Okay, and so what are those drop-off times then?
Those times are 9 to 5, mm-hmm. and they'll be typically through the week. It runs Monday through Thursday. And then we'll be moving in on Friday morning.
All right. And then you guys haul it all over to the field house then, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So we'll bring the whole staff together. We've got a huge crew of coaches, obviously, through all of our divisions, and we'll be bringing that in, setting it all up, and getting it ready for our open on Friday evening.
Yeah. All right. So folks need to know, I mean, if they want to sell it cheap.
Yeah, I mean, you really can't go in there with a, you know, one-year-old set of boots or skis and think that you're going to get, you know, retail or close to retail pricing. If you want the stuff to leave your garage, price it low so that you can get it moving.
All right. And you do have limits on what you will accept.
Yeah, for the most part, we don't accept stuff, you know, that's, more than, you know, 10 years old. So we really try to, you know, consolidate the gear to make sure that A, it's safe, and B, it's going to be able to pass inspection if it goes to a ski shop for DIN checks or whatever.
Right. And no helmets and things like that.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Let's see. Let's talk. Adam was talking, of course, the SkiMo Master Program, but you also offer that in other sports?
Yeah, so we actually have, we started Masters in our Alpine program here several years ago. It's been a great hit. We've had anywhere from up to 45 athletes in the season. They train exclusively at the Utah Olympic Park on both the Spencer F. Eccles Olympic Mountain Center, West Peak area, as well as the Intermediate Hill. So they get a plethora of different trails that they can ski on right at the Olympic Park. They're also free skiing at both of our partner mountains with Deer Valley and Park City.
Okay. And then there's a Nordic Masters program as
yep,
well?
Yep, there is a Nordic program. Again, if you're interested, check out our website, and I would reach out to our cross-country program director, Emma Garrard.
Okay. Let's see. And winter programs are, what, under registration now?
Yeah, we've had registration open for all of our winter programs across all of our divisions. A lot of them have been filling up, but we've still got space in some. Alpine specifically is mostly full. We do have our second portion of Devo Placement Day here on Saturday, December 7th. So if you do have athletes in your family that are age 9 by this December 31st, or age 10, they are eligible for that Devo program and can register and sign up if they're interested.
Okay, you say part two because you did something this spring, right?
Yeah, we really tried to match what Vail Resorts was doing with their returning programs and, you know, wanting to get their people signing up early. So we did a spring ski up this year. We invited all of our farm team and Learn to Race and our Skills and Drills and Grom program athletes within our youth development programs into that assessment day in the springtime. And we saw already 25 athletes sign up. So we've already got a handful of athletes, and we're looking this year, Leslie, like we're going to have one of our biggest Devo teams that we've ever had.
All right. Kids that may not have been placed last spring, are they eligible then to try again?
Yeah, they certainly can. Obviously, we've been talking to some families who have been really interested or want to see their athlete moving up. So, you know, they've been working hard during the dry land and making sure that they tried to get some extra ski video in. But again, reaching out to myself or our junior programs director, Jason Lance, for the best and most accurate information would be the best to do.
Okay. And then what are some of the other programs that you offer?
Well, we've also got our snowboard. Snowboard programming is still, you got space available, and programs are also open right now. Free ride and free ski, we've got programs open there as well. Their late fees do go in effect October 31st, so you know, get on it and make sure you sign up before then. And our youth development programs, we also have our Learn to Fly, which is our ski jumping program. Adam can speak directly to that, as well as our Little Rippers, which is our snowboard program. And those both meet 2 days a week during the winter. The Little Rippers is at Woodward, and then the Learn to Fly is at UOP.
All right, and you get kids going off one of those jumps?
Yeah, so our little our Learn to Fly program is a great opportunity to try out the sport of ski jumping, which I also oversee. And, you know, like so many of our sports, we love to start them young, and the kids love to start young as well. So that's a super fun opportunity. It's a great age to start. Hopefully we can see as many kids as possible in that program. And, you know, if not, we do, or for those that are a little older, want a different commitment level, we do have space in our regular programs.
Okay. And then, of course, Jan's Winter Welcome. I know you're one of the beneficiaries of that your teams.
Yeah, it's obviously one of our biggest fundraisers. And it's, you know, we've been pushing really hard for our opportunity drawing ticket sales. There's a trip to Belize this year for a house. So we are in a tight race right now with our Nordic and Skimo teams for the first team to sell 400 tickets. So we are very close to that. We've got 4 days left for those opportunity drawing tickets to be sold. So you can reach out on the YSA webpage, as well as Jan's opportunity drawing webpage, and buy tickets right through there.
Okay. Anything else you guys want to mention?
Yeah, with the swap this year, we do have, which we did last year, is that restaurant. If you spend $50 at a participating restaurant, which includes Hearth and Hill, Godotti's, Sterling Steak and Lounge, Billy Blanco's, Windy Ridge Cafe, and Park City Brewing, if you eat there and spend over $50 between October 30th and November 2nd, you can get one free entry for Saturday or Sunday to the ski swap.
Okay, just bring your receipt.
Exactly.
Okay, Adam, anything?
I know you had Emily and Ashley with the YSA in just yesterday, but just a reminder that Jan's Winter Welcome is not just for those at the gala. The silent auction goes live online tomorrow, so check that out. And if you want to support specific teams, you can even search this year. It's kind of a new function. You can search for teams for items that support PCSS or figure skating or whichever program you feel most inclined to.
Okay. Hey, I think I had you in earlier this year, and you were talking about training for another long distance race. What did you do? Did you do it?
Yeah, I did a couple this year, and ran 100 miles about a month ago. So.
Okay. Finished? No problem?
There's always problems, but I finished.
Okay. Congratulations. Tommy Eckfeldt, Adam Loomis, thanks for your time.
Thank you.